This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Millennials continue to make up a larger percentage of the workforce and the leadership of businesses, communities, schools, and other organizations. So what can an older generation of leaders do to help support them? It's the topic of this year's conference on servant leadership held by Viterbo University. Today we're talking about the issue with existing and emerging leaders. Rick Keit, director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University. Paul Fuchsel, president and owner of La Crosse Sign Company. Ashley Skozinski, executive director of the La Crosse Builders Exchange, and Ryan Clark, manager of the training department at Quick Trip. So you've all been asked to be a part of this panel because you are leaders in our community. And so, Paul, I'll have you start by telling us a little bit about what you do and kind of what being a leader means to you.
Well, thank you. In our company currently, I am overseeing and managing the employees, helping them realize that they've got many of the skills that they need in their departments to make those decisions. I am trying not to make the decisions any longer and allowing them to make their decisions, setting the pace and the culture in the business, just helping to develop the people, as you had said earlier. We are growing leaders and transitioning our companies to the new leaders in the company. So I see it as my job and responsibility to help them grow as individuals.
I wonder if you could speak more about maybe what inspired you to not make those decisions, as you're saying, and kind of empower others, people, to make those decisions. I'm sure that that is an interesting dynamic as the owner of the company.
Well, I knew that I could no longer continue to make all those decisions on my own as the company continued to grow from back in 1975 when I started in the organization, 1988 purchasing the organization. At that time, there were 16 employees, and today around 75 employees. I knew that I would no longer be able to manage the way we did back in those days. So I would need to grow them as leaders so they could run and lead their departments.
Ashley, tell us a little bit about what you do and kind of what being a leader looks like for you.
Sure. I work at La Crosse Builders Exchange, which is a commercial construction association. Being a leader for me is really about guiding people, growing people. I see leadership as really deep soul work, more than just making a profit or completing a strategic plan. For me, it really relates to listening to people, accepting them for where they're at, remaining calm, being that calm presence, and really guiding people and organizations to a better version of themselves.
Yeah, so that's a much, I think, deeper definition of leadership than what maybe would come to mind for most people when they think about like an executive director position. And so I wonder kind of what influenced you to really think about leadership in that way.
For me, I feel like it was just an innate, natural way that I've always viewed leadership. I've always believed in the mind-body-spirit connection. I believed in the whole person, the holistic view of a person and of an organization and even of a community. Servant leadership was very attractive to me because I also believe that on a deep level we're all equal despite what title we might have or the car we drive or our income. It really comes down to who we are at our core, and that's really that we're all equal. And that's why, for me, servant leadership is such a great fit.
We're planning to continue to dig into more of what servant leadership really means. But you know, I want to turn to you, Ryan, and have you, you talk a little bit about what you do at Quick Trip and what being a leader means to you.
Well, our team, we're responsible for a lot of welcoming folks to our company. About every 2 weeks, we have a new group of store leaders coming through. And one of our primary roles is to really model that behavior of what a leader should be. When they get back out to the store and they have a team of their own, they can see that, they can use what they've learned. A lot of it is just communicating what our culture is, too. People come from a wide variety of backgrounds, and we think that we've got a pretty good a pretty good system going at Quick Trip. So we want to model that. We want to communicate that out to those new leaders. We welcome new people at our support center here in La Crosse. We do the new coworker orientation with them. And again, it's just a lot of it is letting them know they've made the right decision. Being a leader to me, it really is that modeling those behaviors and compassion. I think that's overlooked by a lot of people, just the importance of compassion in a leader.
How has compassion been a key, key aspect of your role as, you know, a manager, as a leader in your company? Is there a specific example where compassion has really come in handy for you?
It's just all of the little things that come up over the course of the day. People have so much going on in their personal lives. People have so much going on in their work lives. As a leader, if you have the ability to take one of those stressors away from them and let them focus where they need to be, if somebody's got a sick parent, a sick child, and you can let them know that, you know, somebody's going to cover for you, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. I think it goes a long way to modeling those behaviors.
Rick, I wonder if you can dive into a little bit more about what servant leadership is. We've heard this term brought up now, and I just wonder if you can maybe give a definition of kind of, you know, how Viterbo talks about servant leadership.
It's interesting because there are so many people define it in so many different ways, and I don't know that I've ever come up with a single definition that I'm completely happy with. It's mainly about beginning with an attitude, the attitude that our purpose is here to serve. And what happens in when you model that kind of attitude in a group with others, and you also display competence, you know what you're doing, how to get the task done, but you have a genuine interest in the well-being of others. What happens is they want to follow that. And we find that happening in groups over and over. So this idea that directing one's attention to the well-being of others for the sake of some higher purpose, and usually we express that in terms of the common good. So how do we get a team of people focused together on the common good and all really concerned about the well-being of one another? And when that happens, it's really amazing. Great things start to happen in an organization. And it sounds very simple. The problem is it's just really hard to do, right? Because we all get beset by so many different kinds of daily concerns and tasks. And we get distracted lots of times as leaders, and we forget to really put our attention on others.
Can you speak a little bit about, what the Institute for Ethics and Leadership of Viterbo University, you know, what that organization or institute is about and kind of, you know, how you've been really encouraging these conversations about servant leadership in the community?
So the institute was founded 20 years ago, 1999, and the idea was how can we lift up conversations about ethics and the relevance of ethics to leadership within the community? And so what we do is we host a number of events each year, mostly lecture series, and we do a variety of conferences and workshops and so forth. But the idea is if we're really focused on the common good and we lift up those discussions and bring it to the forefront over and over and over again in our community, then we gradually change the culture, and that's what we've been trying to do.
That's Rick Kite from Viterbo University here with us today to talk about servant leadership ahead of an annual conference in La Crosse. He's joined by Ryan Clark from Quick Trip, Ashley Skozinski from La Crosse Builders Exchange, and Paul Fuchsel from La Crosse Sign Company. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. So as I mentioned, Viterbo is hosting their annual conference on servant leadership coming up. This is going to be the fifth conference of this type. You know, I wonder if you could speak a little bit about, you know, what the conference focuses on and what you hope people walk away with from that conference.
Well, really two things. The first is the theme of emerging leaders. So We've gathered a number of people, both these are national speakers and local speakers, who focus on how do we develop this next generation of leaders. and develop them to really be responsible and to be competent. So that's one thing. It's like, just let's have a conversation about that and get the advice of people who have a lot of experience in practicing and in developing young leaders. The second thing is to just enhance the conversation that we have as a community. That is, if we've really made some progress in this community of focusing on servant leadership as the model, and there's kind of, I think, an expectation in a number of companies in the region now that this is the way that leadership is done, and this is what we should be trying to do. And so what we want to do is being kind of a thought leader in this area so that these conversations become more and more normalized.
Yeah, Paul, I wonder if, you know, as someone who has been a leader of their business for a number of years now, have you started to see this transition to more servant leadership? And maybe could you talk about how thinking about servant leadership, how it's different from other leadership models we might see?
My belief is it is not something that you can read a book or go to a class and become a servant leader. It's something that has to be internalized. And once it's internalized, then you can share it with those around you. It's a model behavior. It's a learned behavior. The servant leadership that Rick is talking about, that's a good place to go to understand what needs to happen, but those things need to then be internalized. If somebody says, well, I want to read a book to be a servant leader, it takes a little bit more than just reading a book. It has to become you. You have to become a part of it and then show those around you the difference. I think in today's business world, being a real person and understanding that everybody has something that they're challenged with or that they're dealing with, and realizing that you need to give them some space sometimes to work through those things or be there to walk alongside of them, that's a servant leader.
Do you think that that was an aspect in previous leadership models, you know, maybe more what we think of as a traditional executive at a company? You know, were we seeing leaders exhibiting those kinds of, you know, compassion is what we've heard it called, that holistic thinking about a person?
If what you're saying is it's my way or the highway, that type of old leadership compared to servant leadership today, I don't think today, as tight as the workforce is, that it would be very easy to keep people in your work environment if it was my way or the highway. I think it's a collective effort between yourself and your employees and working together to understand what their needs are as well as your needs and making it all come together for the betterment of your organization and them and their family.
I think this is an interesting idea you bring up of, you know, this is not happening in a vacuum. It's happening in a, you know, time where unemployment is at record lows. We have tons of job opportunities in our area especially. I mean, Ryan, you brought up this idea of a culture of a workplace and how that's really important to your organization. You know, how much do you think that focus on culture has to do with the fact that, you know, people have more opportunities when it comes to jobs?
I think that's absolutely true. If you get outside of this area and you don't see those servant-led companies in other areas, it's probably a little bit different than what we see. But it's not just your benefits. It's not just your pay that's attracting people now, especially in this area. It's the culture of the company, too. What does the company bring to the table? How are you going to be treated once you're there, past the benefits, past the paycheck? I think it's an absolutely essential part of bringing people in.
Ashley, how are the leaders in a company, you know, really responsible for setting that culture?
The leaders are 100% responsible for setting the culture. We know that people tend to subconsciously pick up on the energy or the mood or the emotions of the leader. So the tone that the leader sets for themselves and those around them will also set the tone of the entire organization, the culture, and really everything that permeates around them.
I wonder also, Ashley, how you think, I don't know, these examples of certain servant leadership also play out in other spaces outside the corporate business world. You know, how mm-hmm. are we seeing these kind of principles playing out in our community, in our neighborhoods, our schools, nonprofits, or faith groups?
Mm-hmm. Well, Robert Greenleaf, who really coined the term servant leadership, said, "Do those served grow as persons?" And I think we can see around our community or in our organizations or just various groups or nonprofits, do the people that we're serving, our employees, our stakeholders, the people who are getting services, customers, are they growing? I believe they are in our community. We see that growth and that evolution of our community.
Rick, I wonder what your thoughts are on how these servant leadership principles are also playing out in spaces outside the business world.
They're playing out because they're deeply ingrained in human nature. And I think this is one way of understanding what servant leadership is saying, well, how are people really motivated? And it turns out that we're really motivated through love and compassion and empathy, that these are really deep within us. Now, you can also motivate people through fear and coercion and those things, but they're always short-term efforts, right? You can get people to do something for a little while as long as you've got some kind of power over them. But if you really want to, grow a team or grow a family or grow a community, something like that, what you've got to do is use the methods that really lift people up and elevate them and bring out the best in them. And so servant leadership is just a recognition, well, if this is what people are really like deep down, then why don't we intentionally try to cultivate it in our communities and in our organizations and then see what happens. And then when you look and see, well, let's take some objective measures like Fortune magazine. They have every year they publish 100 best companies to work for. And you just go through that list and you say, well, how many of them are intentionally trying to cultivate a servant leadership culture? You find out, well, about half of them are. Well, this is really remarkable that like the organizations that end up being long-term most successful are also the ones that people want to work for, right? They're pretty consistent. They're all trying to do the same thing. They're all trying to respond to what really motivates and brings out the best in human beings.
I also want to get your thoughts on this idea that was brought up earlier of, how these leadership principles are influenced by the fact that, you know, we do have a low unemployment rate. We do have a high demand for workers in our area and our state and, how that's really influencing the way leaders in the business world are thinking about leadership.
Well, see, what happens when you have really low unemployment is you have to find other ways of attracting people because people have the freedom to go somewhere else, right? The other thing that happens is if you're not a very good place to work for, you might keep some of your workforce, but your best employees are going to be the ones that are most likely to move somewhere else, right? Because they have the most opportunity. So then you really have to focus on culture. Well, how do you do that? We have all kinds of studies, for example, of employee engagement. This has become a really big thing. So we measure, like in any organization, if they know what they're doing, they're looking at employee engagement, and they're trying to measure it and improve it. Well, we knew that there's two things that really move the needle on engagement. One is that people find their work meaningful, and the second is that they see in themselves a pathway to contributing to that meaningful work. And so if they're doing something that they don't believe in and they don't have a way of voicing what they're doing or a way of say, how can I do this better? If they don't have any way of contributing to that, they're going to be disengaged. Well, this is what servant leadership is all about. First of all, let's make sure that what we're doing is contributing somehow to the common good. This is what makes it meaningful. Secondly, as a leader, I've got to be listening to my employees, right? Because they're going to tell me how it is that they can contribute. And that becomes part of my job. And so you see right away that if you're really practicing servant leadership, what you're doing is you're actively finding ways of keeping people engaged. And this is what everybody is looking to do, right?
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today, we're talking about servant leadership ahead of an annual conference on servant leadership held by Viterbo University in La Crosse. We're here with Rick Kite from Viterbo University, Ashley Skosinski from La Crosse Builders Exchange, Ryan Clark from Quick Trip, and Paul Fuxel from La Crosse Sign Company. Rick, earlier you mentioned that this year's conference really focuses on emerging leaders. And I wonder if you could define who that is.
Well, yeah, emerging leaders. So this is the, yeah. So one way we've looked at it is, well, millennials are say, younger people in the workforce. We know that by 2025, 75% of the workforce will be millennials. This means that that particular generation is assuming leadership roles at a much younger age than previous generations have. They are then almost by definition going to be emerging leaders. They'll be entering into leadership roles for the first time. And the big question then is, like, how are they mentored? Well, if you enter into leadership roles at a later age, you probably had a lot of opportunities for mentoring and seeing different kinds of leadership practice, and you have a time to reflect on that and say, pick up, like, what are the good ways to do it and what are the bad ways to do it and how am I going to be a leader myself? If you enter into leadership at a younger age, you probably haven't had as much time to get the mentoring and also to learn from both good and bad examples. So that becomes a challenge for our organizations. Well, we can't rely on people picking this up for themselves, right? We've got to actively cultivate leadership and the kind of leadership we want for our organizations to succeed. So that's kind of how we're thinking of emerging leaders, is that our leaders are emerging at an earlier age, and we better be intentional about how they develop their leadership skills.
You started to touch on this, but I was going to ask you, you know, why is this topic really important to the La Crosse area and really to the Coulee region in general?
Well, if you have good leadership, what you have is you have flourishing communities. And so do we really want a successful, vibrant community that's focused on the common good, that helps to lift all people up and not just some people? If that's the case, we've got to have good leadership. Because there's nothing that will sink an organization or a community faster than bad leadership. It takes a long time to build good communities, healthy organizations. It takes a long time and a lot of work. It takes a very short time to ruin things. And bad leaders, not only can they ruin things really quickly, it has lasting repercussions. What it creates is a culture of distrust and disengagement that takes a long time to recover from.
Ashley, I wonder what your thought as someone who might fit into that category of an emerging leader, what your thoughts are on Rick's assessment.
I think it's absolutely accurate. I think we as the younger generation are being called to assume greater responsibility more quickly than maybe some of us anticipated. The role of mentoring is extremely important. I recently wrote an article on how influential that is in really forming the leaders of tomorrow and how much we need mentoring, that we recognize that we might have the skill set to be a leader, but we also need the support and the guidance to continue growing and to continue evolving within our own leadership style.
Where have you found that mentoring in your own personal career?
I can think of a few specific people. My last job with the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration offered several mentors. Sister Jean, one of the sisters there, spent a lot of time listening to me and guiding me with her wisdom and her non-judgment. And I think in all of our workplaces and within the community, we also find examples of mentors who might just have a conversation with us or listen to something that we're going through or that we might need advice on. So I think really mentors are all around us, and when we can find someone that we really connect with, it's really, truly special.
Ryan, I wonder if you've experienced mentors in your career that have, you know, been influential in the way you think about your leadership role.
I certainly have. It's when we were going through the servant leadership program at Viterbo, just the community members that we were in touch with, people from all walks of life. A lot of times you'd walk into the classroom and the focus of the day was suddenly on whatever was troubling somebody. And you had all of these resources available to you to talk about it. Certainly my supervisor at work has been a fantastic mentor for me, pushing me down any number of paths, or maybe not pushing me, but helping me down those paths, guiding me, non-judgmental, as Ashley has said in the past, talking through things. I think the role of a mentor is really that person who will give you feedback and advice, whether you need to hear it or not, in a non-judgmental way. You're on the right path. Maybe you're not on the right path. Let's talk about this. But it really does develop you as a leader. When I was younger, 18, fast food restaurant, given the title of manager, there was no such thing as a mentor. And you're new in a leadership role. You make a lot of poor choices. Now, a little bit older than 18 at this point in my life, now you have these people around you. Now you feel like you have somebody you can turn to. It's great. You don't feel like you're alone anymore. You feel like there is somebody that you can talk to, somebody that can help with those decisions.
Paul, how has mentorship been important in your career? And I wonder maybe if you've had the opportunity to be a mentor to others now.
Yes, I am a mentor, of course, to all the people in our organization. I also belong to what we would call probably a mentors group. It's a group of 16 other businesses. It's called Epic 21, business leaders just like myself that have mentored their employees and the challenges that come along with owning and mentoring employees in your business. We talk about those on a monthly basis with the other business leaders and learn and grow from those leaders so that we can do better jobs within our organizations through the other members that we have in our group.
So it sounds like that mentorship, that teaching can really happen across businesses, across industries.
Yes, you certainly can learn a lot from other businesses. And generally, it seems like as a business leader, when you rise up to the top, who do you go to next to get those collective bits of wisdom from? Generally, there's nobody else to go to, right? So having a group of other business leaders, you can say, I'm dealing with this challenge or I'm having this particular problem, and how might you handle that? And it helps a lot to have other business leaders and see that, hey, they're going through the same thing that maybe I'm going through, or we can help each other and co-support each other. And then there's a business chair that kind of formulates the whole organization and helps us grow and mentors us as well.
Ashley, do you feel like the La Crosse area as a community is a good place for people who might fall into this emerging leaders category? You know, do you feel like we're a community that provides opportunities for younger leaders and, really supports them when they get into that position?
Absolutely. Largely due to the conference that's coming up and the work that Viterbo University and many of the other organizations do in our community to support leaders, I have a lot of opportunities through different organizations to be involved, to practice leadership, to connect with other leaders, both emerging and experienced. And I think the community does a great job of supporting us and giving us opportunities to grow.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on this issue? Do you feel like La Crosse does provide those opportunities for younger leaders?
I'd agree too. The conference itself, it's if you're an emerging leader and you're able to go, I'd certainly encourage you, go network with people. I wasn't immediately aware of it when I was newer in leadership positions, but there are any number of different events that Viterbo holds for leaders, just sitting around a table, talking to each other, a couple of group discussions. this is an excellent community for that. And it really is, like Rick said earlier, we're going to raise the bar in this area because of those opportunities.
Ryan Clark, manager of the training department at Quick Trip, is here with us today to talk about the next generation of leaders in the La Crosse area and how the community can help prepare them. He's joined by Ashley Skozinski, executive director of La Crosse Builders Exchange, Paul Fuchsel, owner and president of La Crosse Sign Company, and Rick Kite, director of the D.B. Reinhart Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on servant leadership ahead of an annual conference at Viterbo. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Viterbo University is getting ready to host its fifth annual conference on servant leadership in La Crosse. This year's conference focuses on emerging leadership, where the next generation of leaders at businesses, schools, and other organizations are coming from, and what previous generations of leaders can do to support them. We're here with Rick Kite, director of the D.B. Reinhart Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University, Paul Fuchsel, president and owner of La Crosse Sign Company, Ashley Skozinski, executive director of the La Crosse Builders Exchange, and Ryan Clark, manager of the training department at Quick Trip. Rick, you know, why do you think it's really important that we start acting now to help prepare and support the emerging leaders in our community?
Well, it's always important. I mean, whatever generation you're a member of, wherever you live, it's important to develop good leaders because they're absolutely essential. But it's especially important now because as we have the baby boomer generation retiring, this is a kind of a massive exodus from the workforce, and then the millennials coming up, we're starting to see a real transformation. And so then the question is, how do we transition? And you've got to do that well. I mean, this is for any organization knows that these times of transitions are really crucial times because you either do it well, and if you do it badly, it can kill the organization, right? If you don't get the right leaders in the right positions, it's really awful. And sometimes you get through it and sometimes you don't. And so this is a concern for not just our community, it's a concern for our whole country, is this kind of transition that we're going to start having. And now, with this new generation of leaders coming in, do we want them focused on the common good? Do we want them to be ethically based or not? Do we want them to be really, really effective at using methods of persuasion to build trust? Or do we want them to have to fall back on methods of coercion and manipulation? These are really important questions. And so servant leadership gets right to the heart of this.
Do you feel like we saw, we've seen similar conversations about this when there have been previous transitions between generations, you know, when the baby boomers were taking, were stepping into that leadership role, do you think this conversation happened?
Yeah, I think it's always happening, right? And every generation kind of looks with trepidation on what is taking place next because that's uncertain. And they can look back on what worked well and saying, boy, I wish we could just go back to what worked before. And we're never able to do that. And so there's always this kind of a golden age delusion, if we could just go back 50 years and do it the way we did it then, but we can't, right? And we should also be more hopeful than we generally are about the next generation. I mean, I'm certainly hopeful. Being a university teacher and teaching, for 25 years, teaching young people, 18 to 22 years old, I would say the students that I've had over the last 7 to 8 years have been among the very best. I mean, they're really inspiring. They're pro-social. They do a lot of volunteering. They're very concerned about their communities. They're much more interested in the quality of their experiences than the number of their possessions. And I think these are all good signs.
I'm glad you brought up this idea of kind of this maybe golden age mentality that we sometimes have. You know, I think one thing about the millennial generation is that social media and even forms of traditional media really like to talk about the things that millennials are changing or killing. You know, everything from that I think of like home sales. You know, these are things that a lot of times people kind of lament about the millennial generation. And so I wonder how. I don't know how you feel like this conversation is different than maybe some of that, I guess, golden, you know, kind of golden age or kind of hearkening back to, you know, oh, if they only things would stay the same or things were how they were, and how this is a different conversation, maybe more productive conversation to have.
Yeah, you know, it's. The conversation about how do we develop leaders for the future is always difficult because we don't know the future we're moving into. And the pace of change is not only increasing, it's increasing exponentially, right? So we're changing faster and faster with the development of new technologies. And those new technologies change our social relationships, and they're changing the nature of our workplaces, even our families. And so it's really hard for us to say exactly what should we be preparing for, and also hard to be confident that it's going to turn out well. Where servant leadership begins with is, like, what do we know about human nature? So even though a lot of things are unknown, we know some things about human nature. We know that people are profoundly motivated by love. We know that that people are oriented towards goodness. And we know that when we motivate people by love and are kind of led by a vision of the good, we can bring people together and things turn out well. So why don't we just start with that, and then we'll deal with the challenges as they arise.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on, you know, this, a lot of times negative conversation that can happen around the millennial generation, and, you know, why looking at this in a different way is important?
I'm Generation X, so I'm watching the battle between baby boomers and millennials and just keeping my head down right now. I do think there's a lot of negativity. I see a lot of negativity. However, I think that when the transition happened and baby boomers were coming in, there were probably some of the same thoughts about them and how they were changing things in the workforce. One of the things that we talk about with our new leaders, we do some generational training with them and talk about the differences. And the key is what influenced each generation. I think the millennials have a pretty strong idea of what happened around 9/11. Baby boomers, it was the Kennedy assassination, and that influenced that generation, kind of brought them together. As far as it's about understanding the differences. The baby boomers didn't grow up in a time where there were smartphones and there were computers that were smaller than a room. They need to realize that there are going to be some differences as they see people coming in. Millennials are going to make things different as they take on leadership roles, just as baby boomers made things different when they came into their roles. They had more than their parents had in terms of the workplace. So I think it's about fostering understanding between them and not necessarily reading a meme on Facebook that just backs up what you already think of a generation.
I wonder if you could speak more about you know, why Quick Trip saw that kind of, I guess, cultural training or that conversation around, you know, different generations as important.
Well, we have a wide range of generations that work in our company, and many of them side by side. If you don't understand each other, it's going to lead to conflict. It's going to lead to challenges at the store. some factioning potentially as this group of individuals gets together and talks about this group of individuals. If we can foster understanding between the different generations, it might not change anybody, but they might understand where the others are coming from. We might start to see value in what the millennials bring, what the baby boomers bring, what Generation X brings. So it's about fostering understanding.
Ashley, what are your thoughts are on this this conversation, you know, across generations that often, you know, happens in the business setting?
Well, I think change is constant. Things are always evolving. Millennials are not the first generation of people to expect or create change. I feel it does come down to, like Ryan said, understanding. I also work with a wide variety of ages, and I'm aware that we bring different skill sets, different backgrounds, different experiences, and all of those are important to a functioning organization or a community. I think learning to work together is very important. And I think looking at the strengths of each generation and recognizing that we're also individual people. So even though I might be a millennial or someone else is from another generation, that doesn't mean they fit the mold or the boxes that are ticked for the qualities of that generation. For example, millennials are known for being addicted or loving social media. I personally do not. I'm not very active in that realm. So there are certainly outliers, and just recognizing that everyone is also an individual and getting to know each person within an organization or a business, seeing them beyond the label of what generation they may come from, is important.
Yeah, I wonder, Paul, if this this conversation about, you know, fostering cooperation across generations in a company and really goes back to that culture piece we were speaking about in the first half of the program.
Yes. You know, you develop a culture in your organization, and our culture that we developed, I would say over the years, was a lot slower moving culture than what the millennials move at their pace today. They move fast. They have so much more information available to them today than what we ever used to have. We've got that information available to us today as well, but it seems like the millennials are so good at tapping into it so fast, and they move fast. They get a lot done in a given day. Many times I think that some of the baby boomers may not give the millennials the credit that they have due for all of the collective wisdom that they bring to the marketplace, and their work ethic, I think, is strong but different. They may like to work a shorter day but get more done in a shorter day. Like Rick said, they may not hang on to material things like we hang on to material things. They'll have it today, but they'll let it go tomorrow. It's just realizing that they operate a lot differently than we operate, understanding that, and giving them room to be who they are.
How has your company had to change maybe to adapt to that? The needs, wants, kind of what the millennial generation is looking for in an employer?
When you have I'll call it a smaller workforce, you have to realize that you can't have everybody punching the clock at 6 or 7 because everybody has a different family situation. Maybe because there's a broken family or there's only one parent at home and they have to get the kids out the door, and hey, we start at 6 and that's it, you need to be here at 6. Those days I think are gone. You need to give room for the millennial that maybe is just a one parent family and they need to get the kids out the door, that type of thing. And just understanding that today's work environment is different than what it was yesterday.
That's Paul Fuchsel, owner of La Crosse Sign Company, here with us today to talk about the next generation of leaders ahead of an annual conference on servant leadership in La Crosse. He's joined by Ashley Skozinski from La Crosse Builders Exchange, Ryan Clark from Quick Trip, and Rick Kite from Viterbo University. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Rick, I wonder how diversity, not just, racial and ethnic diversity, but, you know, diversity of backgrounds, socioeconomic diversity, you know, how that aspect plays into servant leadership, you know, how you guys at the Institute are thinking about diversity in talking about leadership.
Well, there's a couple of different ways you can approach diversity. Let's put people into their categories, and how do we recruit and find a balance and so forth, the representation of different categories of people. Another way of doing it is, say, how do we remove certain kinds of obstacles that might be roadblocks to people from different identity groups having access into the organization. And one of the best ways of doing that is just doing very good listening. So the more, as a leader, you set aside preconceived notions about how people should be, or, you know, how they maybe should express themselves or what views they should have, and the more you start listening to them and paying attention, and then ask sincerely, how do people with different backgrounds and experience, how can they bring in something to contribute, the better off we are. And you end up kind of developing diversity organically, by really paying attention and looking at what people have to offer, both as individuals and as representatives of different identity groups. There's a case that goes back years ago when Sears had a lawsuit brought against them for, this was back in the 80s, I think, they had a lawsuit brought against them for discrimination against women because they weren't promoting women into upper levels of the company, and they lost the lawsuit, and they had to put in an affirmative action plan to hire more women and to promote them. Well, what happened is that they were selling appliances, and the main decision makers on many of the household appliances that they were selling were women. But because men were pretty much exclusively the executives, they had been designing, you know, doing the design of these appliances and the marketing campaign for them, which didn't mesh well with their customer base. As soon as they started promoting more women, what happened is they started becoming a much more robust company, right? I like the example because it just goes to show. Sometimes, like, we think of diversity as something that we have to do just for the sake of, like, fairness for the people involved. But the other thing is it just turns out to be, it's just much better for our companies. If we're operating within a very diverse world and diverse communities, then any organization to be effective must reflect that diversity. Otherwise, it's going to be out of step, right, with the very people we're trying to serve. So what servant leadership does is say, well, the first obligation of the leader is to listen, is to pay attention. And then what you find is that then you end up developing a culture that's much more reflective of the community in which it's situated.
Ashley, do you feel like we have a diverse group of leaders in the La Crosse area? You know, do we have people from diverse backgrounds, from different races or socioeconomic classes, you know, filling these roles of leaders?
I would say that overall we do. I think it's always something that's a work in progress. I think the fact that younger leaders are in leadership roles shows the diversity of age. We see women more likely in leadership roles, certainly working to promote various races, ethnicities, and things like that as well. I think it's always a work in progress, but I think we're making good progress.
Ryan, what do you see as the biggest barriers for emerging leaders moving forward?
That is a good question. I think this goes back to a little bit to your generational piece, just some of the bias that people have against younger leaders. When you're an established leader, you're probably going to stick to your guns a little bit and say, well, my way is what made this company successful, so we're going to do things my way. That new leader might have some different ideas, some unique ideas that you had never considered or you didn't have access to in the past. Emerging leaders have to find a way to I hate to say they have to prove themselves more, but they have to find a way to show that their ideas have value to established leaders who might be a little bit more skeptical of what they bring to the table. It might be, for some companies, an uphill battle. If you've got somebody who's been in a leadership role for a long time, people in the community look to that person, they look to their model, they're going to want that model to continue. In a servant-led company, I think it'll be a little bit easier because you're going to instinctively look at the value of new people. What do they bring? Why did you select them? I think that's probably the trickiest thing, will be that skepticism that they... just innate skepticism from established leaders.
Ryan Clark from Quick Trip, Ashley Skazinski from La Crosse Builders Exchange, Paul Fuxel from La Crosse Sign Company, and Rick Kite from Viterbo University. Join us to talk about the next generation of leaders in the La Crosse area. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.